You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
This should warm your heart to Chains of Mephistopheles.
Meh, it's the secondary color, maybe.
Because I have a strict no public masturbation policy.
This is all Twitter hearsay.
Went undefeated in all my matches this weekend.
He is a wizard in good standing.
There's nothing worse than magic.
Oh, it's hotness.
Oh, you brave soul. Welcome to this episode of TryHards. We're celebrating a few things this week on TryHards, most notably surviving a chaotic weekend. We have new people to welcome, oceans to cross, and some people have some axes to grind. Don't worry, if yours already has a fine edge, we won't grind it to powder here on this episode of TryHards. I'm Sean Seacrease, he's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. Matt, let's get it started. What are you drinking tonight as we saddle up for TryHards?
Well, we bought two bottles of whiskey in for St. Patrick's Day, and between the two of us, over 12 hours of drinking, people coming and going, we finished almost all of them. So I have the last of whiskey that we got. It's a house brand from Total Wine.
Brian, do you have the same question I have right now? Matt, was that Irish whiskey?
Yeah, of course it was.
All right, I just wanted to make sure.
I was a little nervous there.
Yeah,
when you say house brand in Louisville, I don't consider.
Well, yeah. it's their total wine brand. So
fantastic, Matt! I'm glad you were able to have some discount Irish whiskey over the St. Patrick's holiday weekend. Brian, what are you drinking?
Chance to go up to the Quad Cities this weekend for a concert, and was very, very pleasantly surprised to see that the bar that we had gone to for this concert had Pseudo Sue on tap. So I was able to enjoy some Pseudo Sue from Toppling Goliath. Picked up some on the way home, so I'm enjoying a Pseudo Sue.
Did you ask him why they put a picture of a Carnage Tyrant on the can?
I felt that was going to give away my hand, because you know, some of those people I might be sitting across from, and I don't want to give anything away. If I'm playing Carnage Tyrant Nick Fit in the next Legacy event, man, I got to have every edge I need.
You'll have every edge you need, because I'll be just standing there handing you Pseudo Sues if you're actually playing Carnage Tyrant Nick Fit in the next Legacy event. I'll be raw with jealousy as well.
Yes.
The sun came out here. The temperature was above 50 degrees, and we got a hand delivery from a friend of ours who went to see family in Wisconsin. That means it's Spotted Cow Night tonight.
Oh, Spotted Cow Night.
In Command Central, as we get this episode of TryHards up to high gear. We have a new patron, gentlemen, and not just any new patron, a new Heart of Famer. Dan Fournier has decided that he was angry at $20 and became a new top-level Patreon of TryHards. Dan, thank you so much. We appreciate your time listening and your support here on the show. We're now crawling toward our final stretch goal, which is two TryHard outings each year. We'll get to that when we get to a $500 a month level of support. We're over that $300 mark, so we'll see if we can make this happen. Dan, the next time we have a merch offering, you'll be in as a Heart of Famer. And if you are a Heart of Famer, you've already been contacted by us for your shipping address as the brand new TryHards playmats. You got the unboxing pick last week on the Patreon page. They are ready to ship. We'll have details coming up later this week into next week. If you're not a Heart of Famer, about how you can pick up one of those just 50 print run TryHards playmats, courtesy of TryHards through patreon.com/TryHards. That brings us up to this week's raffle. Brian, you are not only acting as shipping central for the playmats, but you're going to be shipping out something else, as it is your week to put something up for the raffle. What do you got?
It's in Latin, so all of my love's into this one card. I have an Ad Nauseam, the black instant for Storm players who are playing the Ant version of Storm in Legacy. This is the card you need.
All right, Brian will start flipping over cards from the top of his deck while Matt double checks the eligibles list this week. Matt, I think we have 53. Is that still the right number?
That is correct.
All right, here we go. The randomizer is set to 53 possibles and 9.
So I'm not sure he'd want this, but you're a drunk pilot.
That's awesome. awesome.
Excellent work. I think he knows how to play Storm. We'll find out for sure after we ship this one off. Your drunk
he'll
pilot.
He'll try to cascade into it or something. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. He'll try to suspend Lotus Bloom and then go off with this on turn three into some janky combo that results in him flinging a Phyrexian Dreadnought at you for a win. So maybe he'll find a way to break it that hasn't already been done. Your drunk pilot, our winner for this week's Patreon raffle, the Ad Nauseam, coming straight from Brian. Guys, what magic did you play this week? Brian, I know it was a busy week for you, school coming back after spring break. Did you get any cardboard in?
I did not. I got a little bit of online stuff with the arena. Just got to try to cram those last few games. We'll get into that a little later. Still winning, which is great. Still opening up crazy prizes and things like that, which is a lot of fun. But no paper cardboard for me this week, I'm sorry to say.
All the opportunities I had to play revolved during the NCAA tournament weekend. Look, this is not one of my high holy days in the sports world, but it is one that I enjoy. I've been just bouncing around from kind of house party to watch party to other event. So Thursday hit a couple of different places. Friday, I got invited to a couple of different places. Saturday, I felt British because I was on like a 2-day bender, just going from house party and watching basketball and people mourning as their brackets were collapsing to dust before their very eyes. So it was a lot of fun. And I don't have a lot of pathos for those people who just don't seem to know what they're doing when they throw their money down. Learned how to play Shut the Box this weekend, too. Apparently, it's a game and it serves to separate you from your money, especially after you've been drinking. So that was a $5 lesson I won't forget anytime soon. Matt, did you get a chance to play any Magic this weekend?
I did get to play the Masters 25. It was kind of an odd number of players. It was 20-something that wanted to draft, so we had four pods. Our pod ended up with seven. We were actually begging the TO to double our prize pool for our pod because he's like, yeah, maybe I will because this is a tough pod. So I ended up in blue-white. It was just kind of like a blue-white beatdown. You got some double strike guys. It had four mana wars, a couple of those things that give your creature +2/+2, and you can sacrifice a permanent to give it flying. Because what I had seen recently was that the format revolved around an aggro, and it feels like very corset format drafting, like corset out of all the corsets. It was fun. I ended up going to actually being one damage short on game three of match two to go into the finals. They just paid top two. First game was a really good game. Second game, I saw two lands, and most of my deck was two and three drops. And I was drawing cards this entire time, and I was running 17 lands as well. So it was just unfortunate there because he really had a slow start, and I could have just taken him down. On match three, we had a good back and forth, and he just got me. What was actually killing me was I did get a Mistress Factory, and he had quite a bit of, I guess, good combat tricks is the best way to put it. He was kind of playing blue-black. And so I lost there, but it was a good loss. Overall, I'd say drafting it was fun, but my two value cards came from cards I didn't even play, and that was a foil Regrowth and a foil Arcane Denial. Didn't even end up playing those, and I played Arcane Denial a little bit, but none of them were main deck. And then the rest of my cards, I didn't play a single rare within all my cards. This reminds me of Iconic Masters, where you want to be able to draft for value, but you expect to go in and pay 30 or 35 or 40 bucks, and then all of a sudden, you get $2 in value because that's going to happen quite a bit. I might draft it again. I'm probably, to be honest, until it kind of drops in price, until they start offering $20 or $25 drafts, which our shop usually does, I'm probably going to pass on drafting this again because, like I said, it just feels like a giant corset, which was fun, but it's just not worth the $40 or so.
Anybody opened any bombs while you were drafting? Anybody that just kind of took it down because of that?
No, there's not actually a lot of cards in this that are bombs. Rurik Thar is kind of your bomb, but like the guy to my left opened a port. I mean, obviously Jace is a bomb as well. One of the guys opened a foil Coalition Relic, and another guy opened a Chalice of the Void that was in my pod. You just need lots of twos and three drops here, and you can't be ramping up stuff in this format at three unless you can protect yourself before that. So if you have a lot of like the 06, 05 walls, that's a morph, they reveal a blue card, you have a lot of those, that works. Phantasmal Bears kind of help too, because they can profitably block as long, unless your opponent has some kind of activated ability. You know, my game one was against another kind of like red black aggro deck, or my match one was against a red black aggro deck, and I was able to just out tempo him. But, you know, having the, I had a lot of Phantasmal Bears, and having that, having activated abilities in his deck was just killing those things off. So as long as you have those early drops, there's not a lot of bombs in this format in the rare and mythic slots that I noticed.
I'm not sure I want to play a format where I had a lot of Phantasmal Bears is necessarily a path to victory.
Right. I was thinking the same thing. If I'm spending $10 on a pack and my best card is Phantasmal Bears, I don't know what that says about the state of the game right now.
Those one drops could have been a hell of a lot better one drops. We had three other blue drafters at the table, but they're a perfectly serviceable one drop.
Phantasmal Bears. Going to win you some money. Hopefully it's not just imaginary money like your pet bear is. Matt, congratulations for getting out playing some M25 this weekend. Dominaria is going to be on the front burner soon. We're going to get into more of that coming up next week here on Tryhards. Tournaments, they span both sides of the Atlantic this weekend. Brian, GP Phoenix was back on the menu. Your text to me encapsulated my thoughts perfectly. GP Phoenix is going on this weekend. Why aren't we there? We went down to GP Phoenix years ago for our 40th birthday and have been itching to get back ever since. Brian, what caught your eye at this event over the weekend as you walk us through the results?
Oh, my goodness. So many things. I was looking at the results of this, and I watched quite a little bit of GP Phoenix on day one or two. I don't know if you gentlemen were able to tune in and take coverage, but I was a little taken aback, kind of with my head cocked, at some of the deck choices that were making, you know, top eight or 9 through 32 even. It just didn't seem like a standard, pun intended, modern tournament. There were so many decks that I was kind of like, huh. And I think that's just, again, just the extension of how healthy modern really is in the metagame. There's so many different things you can play. And as Eric Hoffman, one of my good friends here in Galesburg and great Magic player, said, with someone who was asking about getting into modern, said, you just need to find a powerful deck that you like to play and learn it really, really well, because it's going to be competitive. And I think that holds true absolutely for the metagame that we're in right now. So 1,332 players showed up in sunny Phoenix to take on the modern format and to see if they could bring their homebrew with them. Stephen Locke, second GP that he has taken down in a row, homegrown Iowa boy from the Midwest, Humans in first place, took down Pearson Laughlin on Jund in second place in a fantastic matchup in the finals. The top eight included eight different archetypes, which is exactly what we're used to now from these modern tournaments. We had Red Green Eldrazi, Green and Taxes, Bring to Light Skate Shift, Kark Clan Ironworks, piloted by the indomitable Matthew Ness, Nightfall, and then another Green Tron variant. Sean, this does not seem to be the modern tournament from last weekend or the weekend before. What accounts for all these different archetypes?
You know, I think it's just what you said, that you can get good with a deck, play it with proficiency, and threaten the top eight, if not the title. The decks that I was most interested in over the weekend, the white-black Planeswalker control deck. This had all the Gideons, it had a Sorin at the top of the list, and was using a variety of sweepers and Thoughtseize effects in order to exert some control. And the Green and Taxes list look like so much fun. That is a Death and Taxes variant that I can see myself playing. We'll see where this goes. And don't look under the bed, guys. There is a new boogeyman in Modern. A week after he took down the SCG Dallas Modern Open, he ran it back with a 23rd place. And that was Mr. Wolbers with Ponza. That is not the last time we're going to discuss the dominance of Ponza in Modern on this cast here this evening. This is starting to be a real deck, and as this gets more and more tools and gets refined, I think that a land destruction engine in the format is going to be interesting now with everyone trying to get to four, whether it's for Jace or Bloodbraid Elf.
I was just going to say, I saw that Ponza list, and that Ponza list was, woo, that was hotness. So he was cutting the Mumvoli Acid Moss, and he just went to Molten Rain, Stone Rain just to get that extra damage in. And I think that's smart. The Acid Moss is cool, but I just don't think it does it. This deck is pretty cheap as well. I mean, you're talking four Blood Moons and your Chandra, Torch of Defiance. Well, your blood brain analysis, though, if those are expensive, and then your fetches. And that's it. I mean, that's your expensive part. So this one may get thrown in the bag and may get future play out of me. Did you see the Lead the Stampede green-black Elves deck as well? That was a little bit different. Yep. Because...
saw that on camera, and its turn that it pulled off the instant speed win against black-white Planeswalkers made me a little bit sad that you now have creature decks that can play over the top at instant speed.
Yep. Collected Company is just what? Like what? Like question mark? And then the one that I really like, though, Madcap Experiment, blue-red. I just think that one is so freaking cool. It's got a certain amount of, I guess, questionable plays as far as, you know, it's there's some randomness to it, but that looks so just so awesome. And then, of course, it's running, you know, Entrancing Melody, fun cards like that, and it kind of goes into a Young Pyromancer build as well. There's a lot of good decks here. I mean, you saw 30th place. You saw the Taking Turns deck pop up. A lot of humans. I think humans are kind of your enemy number one right now, and humans are actually going, I've noticed, going over towards green a little bit, just so that they can play the Noble Hierarchs and the Yisan the Wandering Bards. That was kind of a newer, in the last couple weeks, a newer addition to humans.
Matt, I want to ask you about that blue-red moon deck that was playing Madcap Experiment and Jace. That gets surprise points in my book if you're playing at an unknown event. But what do you do once people know to bring in Ancient Grudge? Like, you spend all that time setting up, and it costs you 4 to Jace or 4 to Madcap Experiment. Then you get the Platinum Empyrean, and then they pay 1 for Ancient Grudge from their graveyard, and you've just spent your whole turn doing nothing. Like, to me, this gets ambush points, so to speak, but now that people know to just bring in their artifact hate, can you really spend 4 mana to do nothing?
If you're a good player with this deck, I think you're playing that Madcap Experiment after you've run your Jace outs. You're only playing that Madcap Experiment turn 4 if you have to get your Platinum Empyrean into play so you don't die. But I think you're running this out with 2 up, 3 up, so that you can use Remand, or you can run Spell Snare against, you know, like whatever hate they're bringing in. Then you've got Dispel and some other card and Negate in your sideboard as well. So I think that's just surviving until maybe turn 6, turn 7, something like that, which you can easily do because you are running these Spell Stairs, Ops, Lightning Bolts, Electrolyze, those types of cards. So I think that's a play version, but I do agree with you, Sean, that this one gets a lot of surprise points, but somebody who's bringing in a lot of hate, yeah, it's tough to play against that.
I was surprised at how many Blue Moon style decks we saw in Phoenix, and a lot of them were playing through the Breach package. This one decided to go with the Madcap Moon, and some of the other ones had the Madcap Experiment package in there as kind of an alternate win condition, but most of them are there to just kind of lock their opponent out. The saddest match I think I saw was with a Blue Moon deck against a Mono Red Burn deck, and that deck just doesn't do anything before game 2 against a Goblins deck or a Burn deck when you're just, you know, there's no targets for that Blood Moon. It just is an absolutely dead card. So it's interesting when you're taking those lines of some of those kind of combo decks, you have to know that you're just a dog game 1, and you just got to bring in those sideboard cards to really shore up your advantage later on.
Guys, what you think about a big-time pro team or a big-time group of friends getting together and deciding that this was the weekend to break out Kart Clan Ironworks combo? I hated this. I hate this because I had to expand my list from Dredge, Elves, High Tide, and Lantern Control to now include KCI. And that is the list that I am adamant against ever playing because I have a strict no public masturbation policy.
That's pretty good. You know what? And because Matt Nass was playing it, I think it took a little bit of the edge off. But it was interesting because as I was watching it being played, I kept watching the interactions with this, and I'm kind of like, wow, this is a lot of do nothing, sacrifice an artifact, draw a card, you know, or sacrifice an artifact, add some mana to your mana pool. And at one point I saw Matt Nass just drawing all these cards, and I was thinking, God, what is going on here? How is he drawing all these cards every time he's sacrificing an artifact? And it was because he was sacrificing these Ichor Wellsprings. Every time it came into play, you draw a card, and when it leaves play, you draw a card. So he was just kind of digging through his deck a lot, which served him very, very well up to a certain point. But that is a deck, Sean, I agree with you, does not seem to do enough to really, I don't know, draw me in as a style of deck that I want to play, especially the GP when we're going to 15 rounds.
You know, I saw him talk about it on Twitter. He said it's very powerful, but it does take a lot of practice and it's a difficult deck to play. So I think this one, even more so than Lantern Control, is a kind of your miracle style where you need to know what the hell you're doing. If you don't, you're going to time out essentially during the tournament.
Just watching turns of the fast forward magic that they have, the time warp magic, and it was still taking 90 seconds on double speed for someone to take a turn on this. I was just like, oh, this is exactly how the creator envisioned magic when he put the game together. So one more kudo for you. From GP Phoenix, where we all wish we could have been, to across the pond in Rome, where we'd all love to play magic at some point in our career. Magic Card Market is a European series that comes up now and again, Matt, and Rome caught your eye this weekend. This is a huge European sort of extravaganza of magic when they have these events.
This would be your somewhere between your SCG Opens and your GPs is what these are. So, and they're only in Europe, and I believe they go into Russia as well. So there's actually four tournaments there. They do the full gamut, you know, the best format ever made, of course, Legacy. They had 111 people show up. They said about 8% of the field had lands. The whole tournament ended up being taken down by Nicholas Crepoli, and I apologize if I screwed up his name. I'm sure I did, with four-color control. Your top eight was actually Rug Delver. Yes, Rug Delver is back. Jund, and if you look at this Jund, Sean, this should warm your heart because it has a sideboard two Chains of Mephistopheles. And then, of course, Check Pile, which is your four-color control, Dredge, Miracles, Infect, Omnishow, and Elves. What do you guys think of that top eight? I mean, I know it's a different meta over there, but just seeing Jund coming back was surprising with two chains in the sideboard, and seeing Rug Delver coming back was also surprising.
Now, what was interesting to me, Marco Pasillo, who finished runner-up in this one, he's innovating on Omnitel, and they called it Burning Show. This is to get more consistency in the Omniscient show-and-tell shell, and he's actually including red now in order to bring in Burning Wishes so that he can have a way to tutor for his fourth show-and-tell, which is in the board. So you can go right into turn two, Burning Wish, turn three, show-and-tell on a more consistent basis. He also has an Impulse in there as well. I love that, to be able to dig through the deck, but just what we need, an uber-powerful combo deck, finding a way to be more consistent. This is another reason that I'm going to have to put Pox down for a while. But that aside, I thought this was very interesting, the way that he went about adding Burning Wish to Omnishow. And this could be the next big wave of innovation in Legacy that we see kind of sweep the states.
I ran the Burning Wish, a couple Burning Wish when I was in Pittsburgh, and put the fourth show and tell in the board just because I was so scared. Well, not scared, but I guess worried about Surgical Extraction. And I wanted to have access to the card whenever I pulled it. So I really do like that. But four of those, along with Impulse, along with two Intuition and four Omniscience, I think was a fantastic play. That is just a really, really powerful deck that, if it gets all the right cards, especially in an opening hand, it's going to be really, really tough to beat.
The reason it actually caught my eye was they were streaming it, and their streaming quality is coming up. It's not at streaming quality where I could watch it all the time yet, but it's definitely getting close, and they have a hell of a team that's doing it. So this may be your, I wouldn't say competitor, but companion to kind of your SCG Opens that are being run over here in the States. So on the modern side of things, we had 192. You will not guess what's took first place. This new love that you guys have described, Ponza. This was one with the Blood Braid. It was running the Stone Rain, Molten Rain, Tireless Tracker package. I mean, this one's really cool. And two Pia and Kieran Nular's, one Courser. It's a little bit different than the one we're seeing. But again, this one cut the Monvali Acid Moss. So your top eight consisted of Infect, Mono Green Tron, Ad Nauseam, Scapeshift, Ponza, Red Green, Vengevine, Mono Blue, Living End, and Living End. So a lot of graveyard decks, or graveyard-centric decks there, seems like. I don't actually think out of all of those there was a single Jace the Mind Sculptor in the top eight. I'm not seeing a single one. I see a lot of Blood Raid Elves, though. So our initial fear was right that Blood Raid Elf was maybe a little powerful. I think the format's adapting to it. Don't get me wrong, but I think it may have been a little powerful.
The only thing that could have been better than Blood Raid into Molten Rain is Blood Raid into Pillage. If I could do that regularly, I think I would just sell everything else.
It even feels great if you're blood braiding into, you know, really any of those creatures, your Courser, your three drop Nissa, your Tireless Trackers, even into a Blood Moon, you just screw your opponents over. Brian, what do you think about, you're the modern player here. What do you think about that modern top eight?
You know, I love the fact that legacy top eights can just be kind of swarmed over with blue cards. And then you go to a modern top eight, and this is true for Phoenix as well. And it's just kind of like, meh. It's the secondary color, maybe, where you've got a lot of green and you've got a lot of red and, you know, you've got a lot of brown cards for the Ironworks and kinds of things. So we had a mono blue living end deck, but it, by no means is that a Jace deck in any way, shape or form. But no, I really, really love this top eight here. It seems like this is, you know, a lot of combo style decks with Escape Shift, with the living ends. Ponza took it down, which is just going to grind your opponent out of resources, of course. Infect's kind of coming out of nowhere. So, no, this is a really, really strong list. One thing I think from Phoenix and from this one, colorless Eldrazi may be kind of on the downturn. That mono green Tron deck is just so finely tuned with Sylvan Scrying and Ancient Stirrings and just being able to kind of smooth everything out so quickly. I think that's the way to go if you're going to play a big mana deck like Tron. You want to go with the mono green as opposed to the colorless. I think you're giving up a little bit on the tempo side by not playing green in there, and you're getting a lot more on the upside if you do.
I love the one of World Breakers. I mean, just having a kind of an answer in your graveyard, you know, being able to just repeatedly cast that and exile an artifact, enchantment, or land, plus having reach, that has mattered a lot for me as well. That can sometimes be awesome. So I can understand why mono green would be very powerful. The final tournament, well, not the final tournament, but the third tournament, constructed tournament, was 57 players of standard. They had white blue gift, Sultai Constrictor, blue black midrange, white blue approach, blue black midrange, mono red, white black vampires, which is getting some really good play, and then red-green monsters. And mono-red ended up taking it down, beating out blue-white approach. There's some unique cards in here. If you have a chance, I would definitely suggest going to the page. It should be magiccardmarket.eu, and just checking these out. The white-black vampire deck looks relatively interesting as well, because it's a really wide, go-wide strategy. They did also have a limited portion of it, and it looks like they had 112. Everyone's not a huge fan of the Ixalan Sealed formats. Luca Ravagli ended up taking that down. This is something I'm going to start paying attention to the MKM series a little bit more here. I definitely think it's going to be kind of our marching orders moving forward, and it looks like they do them about every 2 months or so.
Yeah, the MKM series looks like it could be a great venue for maybe some European meta to be looked at here in the States, in North America, just in another hemisphere, and see if that starts bleeding over. So I'll make sure to have that linked in the show notes for this episode of Tryhards. Guys, as we transition into this week's news, there was some news that came out of the tournament, the GP in Phoenix over the weekend, that really has me scratching my head. It was a 31st place finish, so a top 32 by Alex Bertoncini. Bertoncini came to notoriety, I'll say, by getting a long ban from Wizards for cheating. This is akin to going to jail for crimes, not necessarily against humanity, that'd be a little bit dramatic, but to serve time for an infraction against society. He served his time. Are we really going to take out the hatchets every time someone who was banned by Wizards for whatever infraction serves their time and then comes back and wants to play again as a citizen in good standing? And that's what Wizards has deemed that Bertoncini is. He is a wizard in good standing in the DCI community now that he served that penalty. Matt, you were following this as it unraveled, and I just scratched my head wondering why everyone was up in arms just because he finished well in a tournament.
I don't necessarily think it was that he finished well. I think it was more so that there's no rehabilitation, and he comes off of a ban. And when he came off this ban, you know, he immediately jumped back in. And according to on Twitter, this is all Twitter hearsay, he had a record amount of judge calls against him. Now, that's probably people being overly sensitive to it. I do kind of think that if you start to get multiple bans, they need to start exponentially increasing those bans just so that, you know, hey, if it happens once, yeah, that's one thing. If it happens three times, I mean, that is definitely a possibility that it's going to continue to happen.
Brian, we've seen Wizards react to the community's outrage, inputs, dissatisfaction on a number of fronts with the game of Magic. Is there some worry that this is going to be mob justice of a backlash against Bertoncini by the community? We've seen Wizards ban people from the community before on an official basis. That just means you can't play in sanctioned Magic events and that you won't be recognized as such by Wizards. But once Wizards clears you and you are back in the community as a Wizard in good standing, this is going to happen with Travis Wu and the crew that were given a year ban for what went on a Facebook page. Eventually, they will come off that suspension or Wizards jail time, if you will, and be reinstated into the community. Should we give them credit for time served, or should we always look at them with suspicion? And is that fair to do that?
I think we need to do both, really. There's always been the people who, I think, have been the apologists of, well, it's probably on me because I was a new player. I didn't understand the rules. I didn't understand the interactions. And I assumed, you know, this is a high-powered player. They probably knew what they were doing, so I just kind of gave it a pass. I think, of course, we want to give credit for time served because that is a long time away from the game. A prison term is a prison term. You've served it. You've done your time. Are you going to be just blackballed forever? I don't think that's absolutely right. At the same time, they did something negative to the game, and we can't forget that. So do we forgive? Yes. Do we forget? No. I think for Bertoncini, we've got to make sure that we're looking at his plays and we're seeing that he's doing things the right way. And if it's going to take a lot of judge calls for him to kind of stay on track, well, then so be it. I think that's he's going to have to go through that ringer in order to get himself back in the good graces of competitive Magic players. But, yeah, he should be allowed to play. He has done what, you know, the DCI has determined is his punishment, quote unquote. Hurley, you used an interesting term, rehabilitation. I don't know if there is a rehabilitation time. I mean, what would that look like in the Magic world? I don't know what that is. You kind of serve your time away and then you're back in. And again, you kind of have to confront the players in the room, the thousand other people who are maybe kind of giving you the side glance, you know, the stink eyes, so to speak. That's enough to me to kind of say, hey, if you're worthy of being in the room with us, then prove it. And if not, sayonara and good luck in all your other ventures in life.
It makes me think of, you know, over that year, what are you doing? Are you honing your skill of, and I hate to put it like this, but you're honing your skill of cheating? Or are you saying, oh, you know what? I screwed up. This was a one-time thing. But, you know, if it's a two or three-time thing, what happens? And I want everyone to think about that. Never be afraid to call a judge. Like, it is not a negative thing to call a judge. And anybody who tells you otherwise doesn't want to call a judge called for a specific reason. Probably they're cheating. And never be ashamed to call a judge. I've called judges on myself multiple times because I cheated. I wouldn't say I cheated, but, you know, I made a mistake, drew an extra card. I have several times pondered, and it should have been a brainstorm. The opponent didn't even catch it. And I go, yeah, I just put these into my hand and put two other ones on top. I need to call a judge. Mistakes happen. You know, if it's habitual, maybe we need to review this policy where I'm not saying they get a lifetime ban, but, you know, the first time you get a year ban for some of these severe penalties, maybe the next time you get a 2-year ban, then the next time you get a 5-year ban or something like that.
Bertoncini seems to be wearing the Scarlet C right now. We'll see how this plays out in the community. The price of freedom, eternal vigilance. And the price of having a cheater-free game is eternal vigilance by Magic players. That doesn't mean you should be jumping at shadows. But as Matt said and Brian said, never be afraid to call a judge and get clarification on a situation. That was really a huge talking point that came out of GP Phoenix over the weekend. Speaking of talking points and streaming points and playing points, Wizards is about to unleash a storm of digital product upon a, well, somewhat unsuspecting Magic crowd. The NDA for Arena evaporates on Wednesday, the day that this podcast comes out on March 21st to the wide world. All three of us got invites to participate in the beta. One of us is already set up as a streamer, Matt, but with a wipe coming of all of our digital accounts on the day that that NDA drops, it's going to be hard to leverage what we already have going forward. I in no way chastise Wizards for doing that. I would want everyone to start off on equal footing when my product was showcased as well. Now, this doesn't mean it's available to the public. The game will still be in beta, but it will be allowed to be shared, and we'll be able to talk a little bit more openly about it. Matt, you're the one with a regular stream on the podcast. Are you looking at streaming Arena? And what are your thoughts as that NDA is now being pulled up?
I am actually looking at streaming. I'm glad that they thought of this ahead of time, but they released a content creator kit with some overlays and some basic information about streaming it. And I've been messing around with it a little bit yesterday. So as soon as I'm able to stream it, I probably will. This Wednesday stream, if I'm able to stream it, I probably will. I'm sure there'll be 1,000 streamers on, but I should have a lot of that. And I'm looking forward to being able to play it. Supposedly, they're supposed to drop Amonkhet, Kaladesh, as well as what's currently on there. So that should actually mirror standard to a certain extent.
Now, we are still under the NDA as we record this, so let's not get ourselves in trouble at the 11th hour. But Brian, have you been impressed or unimpressed since you've had some chances to spend time in the beta now that we're heading toward the lift of that NDA?
Yeah, I would say I'm impressed overall. I like what they tried to do with it. It's a friendly interaction. I feel like they've done some things very, very positively. There are some things that are definitely not Modo. My very limited experience on Modo, it's definitely not that. Kudos to Wizards for giving it a go and for taking on this Sisyphean task of beta testing this out with so many different people and getting, I'm sure, the thousands and thousands of lines of feedback from the player base kind of griping about this or wondering about that. That's the kind of stuff I think that the player base should understand Wizards is taking to heart to make the best product they can make.
Brian, I am so glad that you brought that up, because I was just musing over the weekend about being a digital Sisyphus, because this will be, with this beta wipe, either the second or third time that my account has been wiped and then started new again. And I'm like, I just want to play that Mardu deck that I had, or I just want to play that Rug Dinosaur deck that I had. Like, now I got to start over again. All right, I guess we'll start over again.
Yep,
I actually didn't play when I had some downtime this weekend because of the account wipe coming up on Wednesday. And I know this is for feedback, and I've been active in the forums and giving feedback based on that experience. But Matt, is there a breaking point for players who are involved in the beta? I know what we signed up for, but eventually you just want to kind of get over that hump, have the product come out, and be able to kind of say, hey, I've achieved these things or earned these things, and let's go forward with the game.
I don't see another wipe until the product is released. I do really think this is kind of the, not necessarily the breaking point, but this is the beginning of the end of the beta. I know they've said repeatedly they want Q3 monetization of it. You know, to put it nicely, I actually think they're wasting their time programming all the old cards into it. All this stuff cycles out in October, so why not give it another, you know, month and a half, 2 months before monetization and push that schedule back, and then they don't have to spend all this time programming these additional cards in. That's what they wanted, and I think this is, like I said, this is going to be your last, kind of your last hurrah, and then we're almost, without a doubt, going to get a wipe when the game is released as well. So I think everyone will have a lot of fun with it, and then I think there'll probably be some salty feelings, and then everyone will have some fun with it again.
Sean, one other thing I want to say about the Arena League is, because the cards are just kind of coming so fast and furious sometimes with the opening of packs and things, it did kind of unlock the inner brewer in me to kind of look at archetypes that necessarily didn't play into my normal play patterns. I would look at cards in a different kind of way, I guess, because it was just in such a limited format. And I thought that was kind of fun So I don't know if you had that same experience, and I kind of am going to miss that when they do the wipe.
Oh, two of my favorite decks that I play on there relentlessly are a Mardu control deck that only has three creatures in it and a Rug dinosaur deck that is just so much fun. Like, it has pieces and ways to interact with, like, nobody sees it coming when you go turn one, commune with dinosaurs, turn two, search for Iskanta, turn three, some dinosaur thing. Like, people are just, I can feel them on the other end scratching their head. And it has a lot of powerful interactions and a lot of things that it can do. So you're right, Brian. It was fun to get to know the game in some other ways, ways that you might not have been able to experiment with in a powerful standard environment. We'll see how this all goes down. You're going to be seeing this on streams. And by the way, third quarter monetization, that's just Matt's fancy corporate way of saying they want money this summer. And so they're going to roll that out and let you give them your dollars and digital dollars and probably every other way. PayPal, I don't know if they'll take Bitcoin, but they may look into doing just that as they get ready to roll out MTG Arena. That brings us up to this week's In the Elevator. You want to go from 3 to 5? There's no better way to do it in the history of Magic than to get together all 5 colors. Matt, it's a fancy necklace you got in the elevator.
Coalition Relic. This card was notoriously expensive because of supply. I mean, it was just low supply. About $4.50 to $5 on these. 2 weeks from now, when we hit peak supply of the set, it may be slightly lower. After that, it's just going to creep up and up, and in a year, this is going to be a $10 to $12 card again. I do think your foils are a good grab if you get them at a decent deal, to get them at under about $30. Throw them in a box somewhere, forget about them, and you'll be looking at $10 to $15 cards 12 months down the road.
It gives you 2 out of the 5 colors you need for Coalition Victory. Coalition Relic, this week's In the Elevator here on Try Hard. That brings us up to this week's 3 Minutes to Brew. This 3 Minutes to Brew segment has been brewing since our trip to St. Louis to play Legacy. Brian, we are all excited for this one.
I received a text from Sean shortly after the St. Louis event that we attended 2 weeks ago about maybe a possibility of a sideboard card in Reanimator. Ashiok, Nightmare Weaver from Theros. This is a planeswalker that has just had this kind of hold on all three of the Tryhard's hearts since it came out, and we've used it in Standard. I think we've used it in Modern. I know I have. And probably Legacy at some point in our play, whether it's just casual or competitively. Ashiok Nightmare Weaver, 1 black, 1 blue, and 1 generic mana, starts out at 3 loyalty. +2, exile the top 3 cards of target opponent's library. -X, put a creature card with converted mana cost X exiled with Ashiok onto the battlefield under your control. That creature is a nightmare in addition to its other types, or its ultimate is -10, exile all cards from all opponent's hands and graveyard. This is undoubtedly a powerful card, but I also find that Ashiok just seems to have had a tough time finding a home in the right deck. Pearly, where do you think Ashiok needs to reside to haunt our dreams?
Oh, I think Ashiok has a place in our current Modern, because in Modern, it's such a creature-heavy format right now. In a creature-heavy format where you're not going up against turn one, turn two style decks, essentially, Ashiok is a turn three do-nothing. So I think if you're in a kind of a blue-black control deck, and you can get away with running 2 Ashioks in your main, it's such a powerful card. And with the advent of Bloodbraid Elf and all these kind of creature, I wouldn't say creature-heavy, but creature-focused decks, I think Ashiok is going to slowly start to creep in. One day you're going to look around and you're like, man, there's a lot of Ashiok decks around here. So I think in the current meta, I actually have an Ashiok build I showed you guys. Essentially uses Ashiok along with all of the blue-black processors to counter spells, to do stuff like that. Uses delay. I really think that there's something to build around with Ashiok. I just don't know where it's at, but I do think it has to protect itself because it currently doesn't, so you have to figure out a way for it to protect it.
John, what about you? Do you think Ashiok should go in every Modern deck, which I'm kind of expecting the answer to be yes?
I think the answer for that is indubitably, which is meaning that you have to put this in everything that you can. But everything that you can, in air quotes, is going to be narrower than we think. I love this as a one of in an Esper control-ish deck. in modern, especially as something that gives you some variance alongside Liliana, whether it's Vale or Last Hope before you get to Jace. And if you're Esper, maybe you want to think about a Gideon in there as well, original, to help you control the board. I think an Ashiok in that situation eats up your opponent's cards in a control mirror, meaning that they'll deck themselves first. And in a creature-heavy game, you can then get increased value from it. And I think there's a half a way that it protects itself, and that's by going to five when you slam it down. If you're on the play with this, then your opponent's only attacking you with whatever they had in play on turn two. So you can probably survive a turn, untap, plus it again, and then start to defend. If you're on the draw, yeah, there's some real powerful opening hands, especially with Gurmag Angular-fueled decks that can attack and knock this off the board. So you'll just have to be careful with when you deploy it at that point.
Ashiok just seems to be the card that, as you both have said, just breaks open games where creatures are ruling the board. Because if you can take your opponent's creatures, and if nothing else, just keep them in exile, and at the right moment, take one of those creatures and put it into play on your side, your opponent is going to have to spend resources taking care of his or her own cards. And there's nothing worse in Magic than having to Fatal Push or Path to Exile or, God forbid, Swords to Plowshares your own creature because it's just beating you down with it. I think that this could also go in kind of a four-color control. The mana in Legacy and in Modern is so good, you could probably put this in some kind of a four-color control deck, but Ashiok needs to be in more decks.
Ashiok, your opponent's Nightmare Weaver, should have been the name of that card. The only thing that they got wrong. This week's 3 Minutes to Brew here on Tryhards. The end is in sight. What did we do to get better at Magic this week? This is assuming that the Tryhards haven't plateaued on the skill front when it comes to the game that we all love. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Played a lot of Arena, and I have to say, I'm not trying to humble brag or anything, guys, but I went undefeated in all my matches this weekend, even as I was listening to the stream of Modern. I was playing a lot of beta, and it was going really, really well. So I felt really good about my play patterns, felt really good about my card choices and some of the stuff that people just didn't expect coming. I always gauge that by there's a long pause between the time I do something and then the time that my opponent reacts to it. And I kind of just imagine in my head, they're getting up from the kitchen table going, I didn't see that coming. I kind of had a couple of those moments this weekend, so I was pretty proud of myself. I really like, you know, what I've done on that. So my skill level has definitely gone up with the Arena, and hopefully that can transfer to some paper Magic here at some point in the near future.
As for myself, just some brewing. I mentioned those decks I was thinking about, mostly in the Modern format. That's been the breakthrough for me, getting to sit down and see some innovation at GP Phoenix. I mentioned the white-black Planeswalker control deck earlier, a format that I've been a little reticent to touch with a 10-foot cattle prod. Now actually has me thinking about doing some brewing. So I think that's the achievement over the weekend. Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
Played a little Masters, and then I had my buddy over on St. Patrick's Day that is a super casual player, and we were actually looking over his some of his decks. He's like, oh man, look at this. I'm thinking about playing this with Standard, and we were talking about the Challenger decks. He's like, you know what? I can finally get into these Challenger decks, and he's like, I'm super excited. I want to play. I actually have a work schedule now. I can play Standard, and these Challenger decks are going to be able to let me do it. And to be honest, I forgot that those Challenger decks had came out. It wasn't even on my radar, but then I realized, you know, these are great for new players. So it was a big one with, you know, getting to know what a new player was looking forward to, and then just kind of looking through the eyes of somebody who was kind of more casual player.
Oh, you brave soul. Thank you for joining us on this week's episode of Tryhards. May your phantasmal bear always give you value. We'll see you next week here on Tryhards.